Hello and welcome to High Low, a Kurosawa podcast. This is your host for the last time in this iteration, Spencer. And with me is the longtime co-host, J-Dog.
Hello, this is my first podcast. Am I famous yet?
Yeah, so this is. What is that?
What was that? That was the sound of me being famous.
Mary sent me a disgusting
Oh,
picture.
nice.
I forgot where it was. Oh yeah, this is the last episode of the Kurosawa version. We will come back in a few months for something different, but we will announce that in an episode. But yeah, how does it feel knowing this is the last time we're going to talk Kurosawa?
You mean as a regular episode? I mean, I'm sure we'll talk Kurosawa, just not as like an analyzation of his movies.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I think we should possibly reboot the podcast and start over again.
Oh, do you think that'd be interesting?
No, not at all. But I don't like change.
Yeah, the 2 years, 2 months kind of flew by faster than I realized.
Yep.
Yeah,
Our
but.
children are all grown up now.
Yeah, Freya is. We've had her for two. I've had her for 2 whole years. You have a new kitten in your life.
Yeah, but I'm trying to get rid of that one.
Oh, yeah. Give it to Aaron. He can get another cat.
Sure.
Yeah, so this is the last special episode. I debated for a while whether or not to do one on Kurosawa himself, but I feel like going into his life and everything, but I feel like we kind of have covered like all the major stuff over like past 2 years, so I kind of figured it will if you've been listening long enough or like just listened to a couple episodes, you can kind of I don't know, it just felt a little it felt to me repetitive if you just did like a one just on Kurosawa himself. But this will be like a big sum up. It'll be this episode will just be a big like kind of summary of our favorite stuff that we kind of discovered or rediscovered or like our favorite actors and just kind of like some podcasts do, like it's a fake award show thing, and this will kind of be like that, but a little different.
Yeah, without any fanfare, celebrities, or musical numbers.
Yeah, but first I wanted to thank everyone who has been on the show at some point.
You got a list? You got a list of people?
Yeah, yes I do. First and foremost, I want to thank my dog Freya. She shows up in the background on occasion. She's adorable. And I love my dog Freya. Okay, so I'm not sure if I should start from most recent or beginning. I'd rather let's go from beginning. So episode 2, we had Kevin from the Transformers Cybertronological podcast. Then episode 4, we had Heidi Samuels, the animation expert. Then we had Pat Sleepwell, that was Shannon Camp from, what was that podcast she did?
She did one on the Royals.
That got canceled, so. I forgot what it's called. Anyway, so, yeah, then episode 8, Jigoku, first appearance of Gina Radcliffe. Then episode 9, Sanjuro, your director friend Randall, who I think has directed 4 movies at this point, 3 movies.
It might be four, yeah. The one he's still working on has obviously it hasn't come out yet,
Yeah,
but
and he just had another baby.
yep, so he's never gonna release it.
Yeah, he's too busy for your podcast now.
Probably.
That was mean. I'm
No,
sorry.
that's all right. I understand.
Episode 11, Scandal, the first appearance of Josh Hollis. Episode 12, Wedding Ring, the first appearance of, I think, your roommate, Sarah, something.
Yeah, she's a friend of mine.
Yeah, just a friend. The episode 16, Sendaka number 8, the second appearance of Gina Radcliffe. Episode 17, The Lower Depths, the first appearance of Alistair, I would say Crowley, Alistair Pitts from Russo Files Unite.
And also Alistair Crowley.
Yeah. Episode 19, The Hidden Fortress, your friend Aaron from your podcast.
Aaron Corny, something like that.
It was a stretch episode with no guests. Then it was Houseu, which Gina Radcliffe, the third appearance of her, Kagamusha, Lindsay Busco, Halloween, the first Halloween special with our crossover with Kill by Kill with Patrick and Gina. There's Rashomon with Josh Hollis, then episode 27, High and Low with Chris Funderburg of the Pink Smoke, the first appearance by him, Dreams, Aaron Gambrill from Lazy Library, then I Live in Fear with Lauren and Ryan, Studio Ghibli episode with your roommate Sarah, Redbeard with Chris and John from The Pink Smoke, Utamaro and His Five Women with Justin Harrison, the first appearance of him, Dreskaden, the first appearance from Martin Kessler. I'm on the next one. One Wonderful Sunday, the second appearance of Lauren and Ryan, A Taxing Woman with Megan Dooley, Snow Trail with Marcus Penn, the Joe Shishido special episode with Mike Wood from The Grind Bin, The Idiot, the second appearance of Alistair Pitts from Respires Unite, Knock and Die special with Tony Stella, Late Spring with your friend Dave Stonerob, Maradayo with Lauren and Ryan, Ron with Ben Sunday, Tom Popo with Martin Kessler, Throne of Blood with Andrew Schwartz and Justin Harrison, Corneco.
Oh, Wendy Mays.
Wendy Mays.
Yeah.
She does Black Pet River.
Cemetery.
Yeah, Pet Cemetery. There we go. Black River with John Cribbs from Pink Smoke. Then we just did Gate of Hell with Colleen Wingland. And I think that is everyone.
You're forgetting one person.
Who?
Every episode, we've had Jesus as a co-pilot.
Maybe you have.
God bless the USA. Okay, sorry. I would like to thank every single one of those guests, even on the ones, the episodes that I was not on. I really appreciate you being on there, especially those people with the, you know, film critic backgrounds that just, like, blew us out of the water, because that's, like, that, you know, I loved every guest that we had. When we had the film critic people on, like, I felt like I was a mushmouth dumbhead, and it was super entertaining for me. But I also, yeah, like, I feel like I made a bunch of friends having all these people on too. Like people I talked to on Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's been great.
Yeah.
And Gina is, you know, like a sister to me, even though she's not really done. Don't tell her I said that. Oh no.
Okay. No, but yeah. Every guest was always fun as always. Oh, yeah, there's a lost episode I deleted, but you know what? I delete an episode for a reason. Yeah, I like having the film writer people on, like, having Laura and Ryan, if they ever hear this, like, their episodes always made me the most nervous, because I always felt like I sounded most stupid with them on.
You know, as somebody who is more than willing to insult you, I think that you did excellent, and you were holding your own weight when having discussions with them.
Yeah, and then Chris and John on the Redbeard episode were real helpful, because that movie I love, but I still have, I struggle to wrap my head around Red Beard. And you know, Gino is always great, and you know, is Justin Harrison's first podcast.
You broke Justin Harrison's podcast. You know, I'm not even going to finish that.
Yeah, let's don't go.
You know what I'm saying? Eh?
Yeah.
Eh?
Sure. Yes. Yeah, so we have a lot of people on, and some of them will be coming back for the next version that we're going to do. And some people I know are not a fan of the director.
No, but I'm sure that we can get them on for some of the other movies. Because we're going to be, I mean, we're not just talking about, I mean, at this point, people know we're going to be talking about Spike Lee in the next iteration. Yeah. We're not just going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about some really big movies that I'm sure people will be jumping at. We just haven't decided what movies are going to go with what year yet. We're making the list, though.
Yeah, it's going to, it won't be as set in stone like this one is with the other Japanese film from the same year. The Spike Lee one will be a little different format, and it'll be a little weirder, and I'm kind of worried about it, but not worried about it.
Yeah, don't worry about it. We wing everything. Yeah. I'd like to apologize also to that person that messaged us on Facebook that was like, hey, I can't wait for you guys to do these other Japanese movies. And we were like, actually, we're about to be done with the podcast. He's like, really? You're not going to do any more? I really appreciate you commenting. And hey, I hope you stick around. And just because we're done with Japanese movies, like, doesn't mean we're not looking for people to talk about the other stuff. And also, it doesn't mean we're never going to talk about Japanese movies, you know? We might get an itch and be like, hey, let's do a special on this just because, you know, I feel like it.
Yeah, I have one in particular that because a guest requested an episode.
Takashi
Miike. One guest requested to do a movie. So we might do that later.
And, anyway, you know, tune in to Please Don't Send Me Outer Space in January if you're looking for some Japanese, because we're going to be covering a whole bunch of anime.
Oh, neat. Akira?
I don't know. I got to think about it. Pardon me. I honestly haven't figured out, like, we're each going to do a pick, and then we're going to have one. I was going to poll our audience, and I haven't picked mine yet.
Well, again, thank you to all the former guests and guests who will come on a later episode.
Thanks to David DeRoy. He's the one who provided our music. I think we probably only mentioned that once.
Yeah, I put him in the show notes usually.
Cool. And Josh Hollis and Aaron Cornelius did our artwork.
Yeah. And
I've never seen those two guys in the same room at the same time.
Weird. They live like an hour away from each other, too.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
And they're always talking about how the other guy's really cool.
Yeah, and one of them had wallpaper he designed at his design firm show up in a viral video with Macaulay Culkin recently.
I saw that.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It wasn't Aaron.
No, it wasn't. And he also had some HBO show used some stuff he designed at his design firm. I forgot to name his show. That's not relevant. Anyway, yeah, Josh Hollis is a cool dude, and also announce it here. We're gonna do guest co-host Predictocast,
which is his podcast.
Josh's podcast with Skinner. They take a month off in January and give it to another podcast. Last year it was Excessively Diverted with Sammy and what's her real name? No, author name. Bo. There we go.
Bo North, yeah.
Yeah, Bo North. And what's the other one? Oh, it was Daniel and Claude from the Cannonball podcast going through this book of literature thing. It's real academic and interesting if you're into that type of stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's going to be us this year and someone else. I don't know who.
Yeah, I'm going to be on some episodes of The Social Minute, which is another Darren Husted minute-by-minute podcast, where this time we're going to be watching The Social Network, although I'm not sure when that's recording, but that'll be coming out next year, too. Fascinating movie, but, like, yeah, it's kind of a far-out idea to choose that to do minute-by-minute, but it's his choice.
He loves that movie. Yeah. All right, so let's do a deep dive into the various questions,
deep dive
categories.
Yeah. So, when we get to the part where we talk about actors and actresses, I'm basically just going to rattle off some names and hopefully you can fill in the blanks, because I went through the movies and I like looked at particular actors and I seeked out, I specifically seeked out a couple. Is seeked a word? Am I being, no. Anyways, so
Legend of the Seeker, a TV series. Remember that? Sam Raimi produced it.
Anyways, so
it's on Showtime, I think.
Joe Shishido. Anyways, you want to start off at the top of the list you gave me?
Okay. In my notes, I did weeks before. It's in a different order.
Oh, okay. Well, give me your. Let's do that.
Okay, start with the favorite Kurosawa films. So, I've kind of hinted at some here and there throughout the thing, but
your all-time top favorite Kurosawa film right now, after we finish this entire project, what do you got?
It's not like an order like that, it's kind of like top tier.
Yeah, but I'm asking you.
If I go with my gut, Drunken Angel.
Okay.
Well, that's one of my favorite movies of all time. Like, that might be my favorite movie, period.
Right. You've said as much. I'm not, not trying to put you, you know.
Yeah, but if I don't want to say Drunken Angel.
No, of course not.
But,
you hate Drunken Angel.
Yeah. So, number one, but Seven Samurai, doing that, watching it again 2 years ago, really just opened my eyes to, like, the first time I watched it, I was kind of tired, and I wasn't in, like, the right mood to watch a 3.5-hour movie.
I'm tired. Let's put on this 3.5-hour movie. That only works with Tarkovsky movies, because if you fall asleep and wake up in the middle, it doesn't matter. You probably dream the rest of the movie anyways.
I mean, allegedly, he didn't mind when people fell asleep to his movies.
Tarkovsky or Kurosawa?
Tarkovsky.
I'm telling you.
Like, Woodstocker, I think Woodstocker specifically, he apparently, if someone told him they fell asleep, he'd be like, yeah, that's fine. Yeah,
some of the actors during the movie fell asleep. I'm not surprised. Not that it's a boring movie. It's just kind of mesmerizing.
It's Tarkovsky. It's something different. But yeah, Seven Samurai, that is just one of the, arguably the best action movie ever made. One of the best action movies ever made.
Yeah.
But it's meant to be incredibly epic, but the actual conflict in the movie is not that epic when you think about it. It's just seven guys against 40, but the movie makes it seem so much bigger and grander than it actually is.
Right. The scope of things is life and death in the movie in a big way. Like, this small group against an army defending this village of poor people, but, like, scope wise compared to what was going on historically in the country, which we have learned, you know, by watching all these films, is this was just a tiny isolated incident that probably happened every single day, you know, without the sort of bravery that we saw on display here. And I don't know if it's based on a true story, probably not, or anything like that. I'm sure legends popped up.
The original script idea was to take seven legendary samurais and do, like, a historical mashup thing.
Oh, yeah.
That was the original idea, but then
get your Brave Fencer Musashis and your
they kept the art, the like, personalities and, like, characteristics of the legendary samurai with the central seven, but I think
that makes a lot of
it
sense.
Was Kurosawa was the one who was like, this just doesn't work. I'm not sure who. I think even Kurosawa or the co-writer Hashimoto, I think, was the co-writer on that. Yeah, but one of them this realized this idea this won't really work,
Yeah.
and this kind of like let's just make them the seven samurai who are kind of based off of legendary samurai, and you pick up on it if you know your history, but you don't need to know your history. It's just a badass action movie.
Yeah, I appreciate that because that doesn't, you don't have to, if you were like using legendary figures, you'd have to lay in all this story of like, oh, isn't that the guy? And oh, I remember he did this, so he knows how to do that, and that kind of thing. It's like if it's just seven guys, like, yeah, you give them like each of these samurai has a personality, and you like is an individual, which is pretty great in itself. So you don't have to worry about like their past. You can just perceive it based on their actions as characters.
And manages to be also very compact, weirdly,
Yeah,
for a 3.5 hour long
3.5 hours
movie.
just flies by.
And I don't understand. Like I've seen other huge movies that don't feel compact like this. This feels epic, yet economical.
Yeah. It's all about the flow. You know, there are some movies that have, you know, if you run into pacing issues, that's, you're suddenly going to feel the lull. That's especially in this era of being able to stop and start movies whenever you want at any point you want. You can always see exactly like, okay, I just stopped this movie an hour and a half in because I feel like distracted or something. Like, okay, we must have hit a lull. But Seven Samurai does not have lulls like that. And
Oh
I
no,
don't
I.
mean LOLs. I'm hip.
Yeah, so yeah, Seven Samurai. It's the generic answer to say, but
Well,
it but.
one more reason why this is the best, one of the best movies, is because it makes Takashi Shimura a badass, and that I don't think that's happened in a single other movie we've seen with him in it. I mean, he's pretty badass in Stray Dog, but not in the same way. Like, in Stray Dog, he knows his game and can handle, you know, police work and stuff like that. In here,
Yeah.
he could cut a man.
Yeah, he's a killer in this one. I was gonna say Sanjiro Sugata, where he's a judo
Oh,
fighter,
that's true. Yeah. He's just,
but he gets
yeah,
defeated
he,
and he dies from his injuries.
as you should.
So,
Sasama.
yeah. Do you have some samurai in yours?
No, I didn't make a big list. I only wrote down my favorite movie.
Okay,
Because that's what you said.
just the one.
Yeah. I mean, my all-time favorite movie out of, like, considering what movie I'm going to rewatch, and I know I'm going to rewatch, and I'm excited to, is The Hidden Fortress.
No, interesting.
And it's not because of any Star Wars things of that. Like, basically, I've separated that entire thing from it because watching it, I didn't give a crap that, like, I wasn't looking for C-3PO, R2-D2, and Darth Vader. I was like sucked into the adventure world and the way, like, if we were going to talk about cinematography, there's so many great shots in this movie, the way it's done, and just that.
Yeah, it has.
You know, like battle scenes and bravery and good guys who might be bad guys and vice versa. And yeah.
It has. This is kind of a spoiler for one coming up. One of my favorite moments in the movie we've
We'll
seen,
talk
where
about that
the.
later.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll get to that later. But I have a couple others. Sanjuro slash Yojimbo, because that was my intro to Kurosawa. And those are ones I watched the most, tied with like Scandal, and those two are my most watched Kurosawas, because they're just so comforting to me. It's like Yojimbo and Sanjuro make this really interesting series of films.
Yeah. Yojimbo is the one I have seen the most. I've seen that like three times, and I mean, it's just good.
Yeah, objectively it's better than Sanjuro, but I still really like Sanjuro, because it's just, as we just said in that episode, it's Kurosawa making a popcorn movie. He's not trying to make like a Western style action movie. He's just trying to make an entertaining, like, action comedy.
Right. Sanjiro ends up feeling more like in the vein of one of his earlier films, The Men Who Tread on Tiger's Tail, where it's kind of an ensemble piece where like somebody stands out from the crowd. It's got comedy, it's got action, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I say High and Low should be on the list of the top of the top. You know, we got Nakadai in there as a detective, and Toshiro playing not an act. You know, he's playing a bureaucrat and stuff like that. But it's one of the way the police procedural is laid out. He's great. You know, the problems people have with Stray Dog are not in High and Low. It feels a lot more compacted into a straightforward narrative. You know, not a lot of meandering there. I love Stray Dog. Like, honestly, if I had to pick between High and Low and Stray Dog, I would pick Stray Dog, but I think High and Low is a masterpiece.
Yeah, it's the better movie objectively, but Stray Dog is just like this great, like, pulpy Hollywood style movie that's like set in, you know, post-war Japan, so it has a interesting new context thrown in on top of it. Scandal, I know it's not the best one.
Oh, you love
it. It's just, yes, I do love Scandal. It's, you know, the third act kind of doesn't work, but I just find it to be so enjoyable. I love Shimura. He gets, like, he's the star of the show, and he gets gets to play, like, this great little, like, kind of slimy but good-willing, but he means well character who kind of changes ways. And it's also a kind of a Christmas movie, secretly. But, yeah, Scandal and Dare to Uzala. But that can go into another category later. Yeah, we'll talk about
that later.
Yes.
I think Redbeard is an amazing feat of filmmaking. Like, you said, like, it took them, like, 3 years to make, right? Or something like that?
2 years.
2 years?
Yeah, no. Yeah, High and Low was 63.
Yeah.
65 was Redbeard.
Yeah, I think that the way the story is laid out, basically in, like, three large chapters of this man and everything that happens around him, and Toshiro is like, I don't think he's got a better performance than he does in Redbeard. Like, he's got more he's got louder performances, but
yeah,
he feels like a master in Redbeard, and it's just so well crafted.
Yeah, it really is. It's an amazing film. And it's kind of it's sad that it destroyed their working relationship, but you know, it happened.
Yeah.
You can't change that.
Yeah.
And it has a great. This is not not one of my favorite moments coming up, but it has one of Kurosawa's best fight scenes.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's brutal and like kind of mean, and then it just gets funny where he's like, "Oh, I went too far."
Oh boy, that's what happens.
But but it's also brilliant because you don't expect that to happen because the way a movie's set up. Like, were you surprised with the son judo scene?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's not in his character to be that way. I mean, he's kind of a gruff doctor, but he's not mean like Shimura's character in Drunken Angel or anything like that. He's just very straightforward and does his work and expects other people to work hard and gives it to people straight. But then all of a sudden he's like, I need to go take care of this situation, like, and you're standing in my way, and all of a sudden, bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, it's like breaking legs.
It's like, we know this guy's got this history, and it's not, no one ever explained to us what's going on. We don't know why he knows judo. We don't have to know. It's written on his face that he's had a long life and experience.
Yeah, it's Toshiro. Like, it's not surprising to see Toshiro do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what are your favorite non-Kurosawa films?
All right, so non-Kurosawa, I gotta say, once again, I only wrote down the one, but I can look through the other things because I have a high and low list on Letterboxd that I just updated. The one that I wrote down is Pigs and Battleships.
Oh, interesting.
Because that was, it was such a different movie than what we had been seeing. I guess we weren't very far into the podcast, but I'd already, you know, I had Japanese movie experience and stuff like that, but this was a, I guess it's a gangster movie, but it's, yeah.
Yeah, it's the first taste of Imamura.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, oh, wow, who is this Imamura guy who made this crazy, like, gangster, post-war film,
yeah,
like criticizing society slash being really upsetting in parts, but also being really funny, yeah, at the same
exactly.
time.
Exactly. It's super dark, but it also super hilarious. And that's based on the couple of movies of his I've seen now. That's, that seems to be his thing. And he does it so well. Like that's the movie I've probably have recommended to people most out of the non-Kurosawa stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, I just love everything about that movie. It's so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
While also being incredibly dark and dealing with things that are incredibly unpleasant, but also just so watchable compared to like some like Black River, which I don't have on my list. But, you know, like Black River is a similar movie.
Yeah.
But I cannot recommend that to most people because I feel like it'd be too upsetting and dark for some people.
Yeah, there's not really a sense of fun there. I mean, there's funny characters in Black River, but there's not a sense of any, like, you're not supposed to be laughing necessarily what's going on. It's got a lot depressing in a harsher way.
Yeah, piggybacking on Pigs and Battleships, I have to throw in The Pornographers, because that is another Imamura classic that is just happens to be incredibly upsetting and dark, but has some moments that are just like laugh out loud, like belly laugh
exactly
moments that come out of nowhere.
Just like things that are freaking terrible. Like if it was happening in real life, I would be disgusted. And when it happens in this movie, it's such a surprise that I can't help but laugh. Yeah, right after I finished watching that movie for this podcast, I immediately started pricing the DVD.
Yeah, Imamura in this period is just, I mean, in all Imamura is great in my opinion. I've seen, I think, at least one movie per decade of his career.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. You have Imamura coming up, actually. So, another one is, for me, is A Taxing Woman. That's my introduction to Juzo Itami,
mm-hmm.
and just his very particular like sense of, not sense of, like he has a very particular style, and he kind of reminds me of the Coen brothers a little bit, if they focus more on like doing comedies, where like A Taxing Woman is just this really funny, really smart, you know, gangster comedy about trying to catch someone on tax fraud, and you see the process of someone trying to catch someone with tax fraud, and it sounds boring, but like that he makes like the process of someone doing something like just so engaging and entertaining. At the same time, this was like a sly, really witty sense of humor.
Yeah, I can't think of, I was trying to think of something else to compare it to. Like, I've seen some French movies that remind me of the way that's done, where it's this person going about their, like, job, which might seem mundane, but keeps ending up in these, like, silly situations because of the people she deals with, and, like, her being very funny herself, like that. What is the name of that actress?
Nobuko Miyamoto.
She is amazing. Like, she has such great comic timing. She makes these faces, and it, like, I'm like, I'm in love with this woman. Let's get married. Oh wait, no, never mind. But
well, she was married.
Yeah, was she?
I don't know. Interesting. Again, yeah, Itami was her husband for until his.
That's why I had to knock. That's why I had to death. Knock him out.
Don't say that. What? It's too soon.
Anyways. Yeah, Taxing Woman is amazing.
Actually, it's been, this month was like the 21st, has been 21 years since Itami was found dead.
Amazing.
Yeah, 21 years. It's sad. Listen to what episode was it? I forgot what episode it was where I kind of bring up the mystery of his death.
It was either a taxing woman or it was Tampopo.
Yeah, one of them.
Yep.
Yeah, me and Martin kind of discuss it a bit in the weird situation. Anyway, so
So yeah, let me ring in here. These things are like directly in my freaking wheelhouse, and I know some of them work for you and some of them don't. But if you know, like things that I'm going to pursue outside of this podcast that are not Kurosawa, are these like weird neo-noir, also hyper-stylized gangster things. So Take Aim at the Police Van, Tokyo, is it Tokyo Gangster? Is that what it's called?
Tokyo
Tokyo
Drifter.
Drifter. And Branded to Kill, like freaking, those movies blow me away. Take Aim at the Police Van is much subtler than the other two. You know, it is just kind of a straightforward noir movie where a man.
It's early Suzuki before he decided to go crazy.
Yeah, he's doggedly pursuing. The man in the movie is not a detective, but he has a lot of experience, and he's doggedly pursuing like the answers to the question he has, even putting his own life in danger. You know, very very noir like, throwing some femme fatales and stuff like that. Gate of Flesh, I forgot that was also one of his movies, and the,
Yeah, I just bought the DVD of
I mean
that.
that
That's
deserves its own thing. So,
yeah.
Tokyo Drifter is so hyper color, super stylized, musical, crazy thing. It's like everything I probably should hate would hate in an American movie. And because I don't know, in Japan, it just I freaking love it.
It's
And I know you
it's
think it's
done in a
okay.
different way. Yeah, I'm kind of hit or miss with Suzuki in the 1960s.
Yeah.
I like his weird art house stuff from the 80s more. That's kind of like the 2.5 hour, like big art films where there's not much plot, but it's still kind of weird and kooky, and plays with like logic and it gets surreal and stuff.
I mean, you like Detective Bureau 2-3 Go to Hell Bastards.
And yeah, that's a lot of fun. Joe sings. And and K.F. Flesh is one of my I'd say like top 20 favorite movies.
It's an amazing movie. Like
Yeah,
it's somewhere in between Take Aim and Tokyo Drifter is Gate of Flesh, because it's not. It doesn't go into the hyper fantasy, but it is very stylized, and it's dark, and it's sexy, and it's yeah, it's crazy.
It deals with a whole lot of issues. It's a post-war Japanese film, which is one of my favorite subgenres of film. I think it's the one of the better of like the prostitute films, which that's a whole separate subgenre of this era too. Like it like what I like about the prostitute films that you see in like the 50s and 60s in Japan, that it's not glamorizing it, and it's not moralizing it. It's just showing like the reality of what it's like. And some are like period pieces, some are like current day-ish, like K.F. Flesh. But K.F. Flesh also has like I think it's top form Joe Shishido.
I mean,
Like he's
it's so weird seeing him like supposed to be the super sex pot in all those movies, and they kept doing it over and over again. You look at that face, you're like, what are you talking about? And one we didn't, I don't think we did, Occult is My Passport, right?
No,
Okay, yeah.
and that's not Suzuki. That was another
Yeah, it's
Nukatsu
one of the Nakatsu
guy.
noirs. The first time I saw Joe Shishido was in that movie. And it's so funny because in that movie he's like, you know, I was born this ugly and there was nothing I could do about it. It's like every other movie since then, it's been like, look at that hot, sexy Joe Shishido and his chipmunk cheeks. Like, what? It's pretty
Yeah,
funny.
women love Joe,
Yeah.
apparently.
Branded to Kill is fascinating because it's kind of like it's like Tokyo
A live action
Drifter,
anime.
but it's like a Hiroshi Teshigahara movie. Like it's got the dreamlike nightmare kind of nightmarish
Oh,
imagery,
yeah.
and a plot that doesn't necessarily make sense, but it does. I mean, it's I don't know what to say. It's super stylized too. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I have a weird relationship with that movie.
Where did it touch you?
I used to hate it the first time I saw it a few years ago, but then watching it again, I appreciated it. But I still, I don't know. It's just kind of, it doesn't fully work for me, but I like it. I don't love it.
I don't think it fully works as a movie, but I love the style so much. I don't really care.
Yeah, I mean Suzuki doesn't kind of care about a straightforward plot ever.
Yeah. Let's see.
Well, early on, he did, but
you move on to some Ozu stuff.
Yeah, I didn't want to go talk Ozu too much because it's we do that enough. But yeah, you know, Good Morning, Late Spring.
Yeah, I think I want to point out Good Morning as like such a delightful movie at least, because like if you're gonna watch an Ozu movie and you just want to enjoy yourself, put on Good Morning because it is like it just brings a smile to my face just thinking about it.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, it's like the one true comedy he made in that period.
Yeah.
But he made a whole bunch of silent comedies, and I think he stopped in the mid-30s making comedies.
I wonder if he was just less successful or he wasn't interested. I wonder what the story is.
For a long time, his movies barely made enough money, so he kind of went to dramas because it made more money. So the studio kind of forced him into that position if he wanted to keep making movies.
Well, it worked. I mean, he still made amazing movies.
Yeah, that had funny moments, but
yeah.
He didn't get to indulge in comedy. I mean,
yeah, his movies all have like a little touch of comedy and kind of things, like because he's just picking up on the average person's life, and life is inherently funny sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, 47 Ronin, but, you know, that's just a masterpiece.
That may be coming up later anyways. Our Lost episode, Here's to the Young Lady.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I remember that movie really well. I think you did like a short stint talking about it, like after we recorded the whole thing. And the song that they sing in that movie has been stuck in my head since we saw it.
Yeah, that's one of the better Kinoshita movies.
Yeah, I dig it. I mean, it has Sitsugawara in it. That don't hurt.
Sword of Doom, but we kind of did a whole big episode on Sword of Doom.
Well, we've done episodes on all these movies. That's the point.
Yeah, but...
I'm sure we'll talk about Nakadai.
Yeah, I'll try to limit that as much as I can. But Heat Wave, Gosha film. Gosha. Yeah, I watched it a second time doing my Gosha series on my site, and it went from being one I like to one I love.
Yeah.
Because going through his earlier stuff, it's just this culmination of like everything he had been doing for. Started, his first movie was 65, so 25 years, 26 years, and so just this amazing buildup of just like this is like the ultimate Gosha movie. This is everything I love about Gosha, and mostly like almost perfect form. He was dying of cancer, and the producer had to step in and help direct and get the movie through production.
Wow!
So yeah, so some of it, the pacing is a little weird. And after I learned that, like, okay, it's kind of weird because the directing's kind of a little inconsistent because of his health. And he made one more movie while still dying of cancer, and then he died after post-production.
I mean,
of that movie.
Yeah, those parts, it feels weird in that movie, but it felt purposeful to me. It didn't feel like it didn't feel like there was another director to me, so I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, well, I know he wasn't able to physically handle the duties of, you know, making a film. But yeah, Heat Wave is really good. Hunter in the Dark, after watching it a second time, I understand the plot a little more, but it's a Gosha thing of, and then in that time period, he loved overly complex plots. He loved that for a little too long, in my opinion. But I kind of understand it a little more, but I have to watch it a third time just to like just have it make more sense. But writing about it helps understand. That's another fun one.
Yeah, Hunter in the Dark is good. Scandalous Adventures of Boruchai. It's not the same director, but that's. I think we keep talking about that one because I think that's another really, really good movie we watched. Just a lot of fun and some gross things that are you can't help but snicker at, and like a kind of a crazy plot and twists, and yeah, like Nagadai being all swarmy, but also like a big baby. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. And it's also historical based off actual events. Let's see. Your favorite actor slash actresses
Oh
that
boy.
we have come across.
Here's the problem list.
Okay, so I'll knock us out immediately. Nagadai, he's simply the best actor coming out of Japan in the 20th
Nakadai?
century. I like him more than Mifune.
He is on my list. I think he might be a better actor than Mifune, I'll say that much.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like Mifune
I don't think he's as
was,
handsome as Mifune, but you know. That's my taste.
in different ways. But yeah, Nakadai, he's simply he's the GOAT, greatest of all time. And Setsuko Hara,
Hakuro.
she is the GOAT, greatest of all
I mean, there's a
time.
reason why we did individual episodes on some of these actors here.
Yeah,
Setsuko Hara
that
constantly
one didn't
blew me
fall.
away.
No, I picked that one because it had Setsuko Hara in
Oh,
it.
okay. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You just picked it, and it for the matching the year to the movie.
Yeah, and I
Okay.
was like, oh, Setsuko Hara? Okay, that's a reason to watch
Well,
this.
let's see. We watched Repast, we watched The Idiot, we watched
No regrets for our youth.
We watched a couple of different Ozus with her in it. I already mentioned Here's to the Young Lady, the Lost episode. I think we covered Setsuka.
Yeah, Setsuko, she was the best. And at her retirement, like banquet thing, she did some thing when she retired after Ozu's death, where she said she never liked acting, she never enjoyed it, and she only did it so she could support her family.
Makes sense. She was a terrible actress.
But yeah, she it makes it it adds a weird like feeling that like she never enjoyed doing it. She just kind of did it because it was a lot of money and she couldn't support her family. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, because other than, yeah, when it comes to, like, the kind of roles she didn't really stretch herself as a character, other than, I'd say, No Regrets for Our Youth. And that's more like an evolution of the character she, like, instead of staying just the girl or eventually the mother that, seems a little carefree, or yeah, I'm complicating the issue, but anyways, I gotta watch more of her stuff. So we don't have to
What
talk
was I going
about
to say?
Toshirô Mifune. That's basically been the
Yeah.
entire podcast.
But yeah, enough about Mifune. Everyone knows.
Shimura, obviously my father. One of the best actors of all time. Not just Japanese actors, one of the best actors. And
Oh,
I'm just gonna
okay.
say that.
All right. Are you being honest?
Absolutely.
Why do you love Shimura so much?
As I said in the episode that we've recorded that you haven't released yet, for Ikiru, he could encompass any role. Like, he just was a character actor that way, but he had a confidence in his acting that came off on the camera. and you could see the way that he influenced Toshirô Mifune's acting style, especially if you watch the movies in a chronological line that they were in together.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think he's masterclass.
Yeah, I agree. He's a better actor than Toshirô, definitely.
Yeah.
I'd say he and Nakadai are like on par with each other. Where Nakadai is like more of a traditional lead man type.
Right, he was getting the handsome guy roles too, though. I don't think Takashi was Shimura was exactly lined up for that stuff.
He looked like a fish, so not really.
You're saying my father looked like a fish?
Yeah, he looked like a fish a little bit.
Them's fighting words.
All right. One person that that was brought up earlier is Nobuko Miyamoto. She's mainly famous for doing the 10 movies of her husband, Juzo Itami, but she also has shown up in other things, but she's kind of mainly famous to her for those, and for good reason. She is as a really amazing physical actress. She is hilarious. She can play like straight drama. Like she can do everything.
Mm-hmm. Really good. Kanemaru Fujiwara.
Interesting.
He was one of the robots in Hidden Fortress. Mm-hmm.
The short one. But
he's been in so many of the movies we've watched for the podcast. And I think that even if he's just a character in the background for a scene and stuff like that, he stands out. Like, I recognize his face now.
Yeah. I thought you'd go with Chiaki between him and both in Two Peasants.
Chiaki is the less ugly one.
Yeah.
So, no.
You're saying Fujiwara was ugly?
Well, just based on this Letterboxd photo I'm looking at. He's not exactly a stellar looking man.
I mean, Kurosawa like to put him in like theatrical makeup a lot.
Yeah, that was probably from lower devs.
Yeah, Chiaki, he was more traditionally handsome.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interesting thing in the Ritchie book, Chiaki was supposed to be a star of The Quiet Duel, but the studio, I think didn't like that casting, so they're like, well, why don't you get Toshirô, and you're like, fine.
Yeah, get that guy who's been in 3 movies.
Yeah.
Daisuke Kato?
Oh, yeah, he's great.
I love him. Like, that guy is definitely a character actor, but him and Yojimbo with his freaking unibrow and his goofy teeth.
Yeah. And him and Ozu stuff, mm-hmm. being like a goofy drunk.
Yeah. He's been in the Musashi Miyamoto series movies that I've been watching, too.
Is he goofy in those?
No, I don't think so.
Oh. I like him playing serious, too, but I kind of prefer him goofy.
Yeah. He's not afraid to look funny.
I mean, he kind of looks funny already.
Yep. Let's see.
Let's see, Kinuyo Tanaka. She as an actress, kind of had a limited range from what I've seen, but that within that range, she was incredible, and she was a pioneer for Japanese film as the first woman to have a career directing films. And this her on-screen presence. She's just so charismatic. And I love her cadence. Let's see a particular, like, her voice and cadence are, like, so distinct. Like, if I'm watching something and I don't know she's in it, like, I hear that cadence, I immediately know.
What was the name of this person?
Kinuyo Tanaka.
Kinuyo Tanaka. Okay, yes, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
So, I'm trying to find this person. I wrote down their name. Here it is. Masayuki Mori.
Oh, he was he the idiot?
Yes, he was the idiot. He was the cuck in Rashomon. No, I'm just kidding. He's the guy in Rashomon whose wife is being assaulted by the bandit. And he's let's see, what else is he in? Well, he's amazing in The Idiot. Oh yeah,
Yeah.
in that one movie, Princess Yuan Kuifei. He's like the
Yeah.
emperor, and he does a great job in that too. Really like him.
Kyoko Kagawa. She was in, I believe, Sanjuro, High and Low, Matadayo, Bad Sleep, Well, Lower Depths, Red Beard. But she'd get like kind of smallish reporting roles where she's kind of playing like a quiet like a quiet woman, but like there's more to it. Like she was like she in terms of dialogue, she wasn't given much, but she just had a very striking presence about her.
Kyoko. Sorry, I'm trying to get a picture of her.
She's recognizable once you realize.
What's her last name?
Kagawa.
Kagawa. You said she's in Redbeard?
Yes. She. Wait, how old was she then?
I don't see your name. Oh, no. Different Kyoko.
I'm pretty sure she's a red beard.
Kyoko Kurusu Susumu.
Anyways,
Sorry. Chishu
oh yeah, I was gonna bring him
Ryu.
up.
Yep.
I love his calming presence on screen so much.
Ozu staple.
Yeah.
He's got such a, his face makes you feel like, I don't know, like a quintessential adult. Like if I was like, that's a person I need to listen to, I'd see his face, I guess. That's a...
Yeah, once I see him, I still like, okay. I'm at ease now. Things are gonna be okay. Like he has such a calming presence, and that, I don't know much about him. He seemed to be private, or no one asked him. But he grew up in the south of Japan, and he has a distinct accent. That once I learned he had an accent, is like, I hear it now when I watch stuff with him, and like he didn't get a lot of roles early on because of his accent. And he was supposed to be a priest, like a Buddhist priest or a monk, I don't know the proper term, because that was like kind of ran in his family or something like that. And he would did that briefly, but then he kind of gave it up for acting, which I think carries over because of his calming presence.
Yeah.
And Ozu said about him, one of my favorite Ozu things is he said, he's not a great actor, but he works for me. That very Ozu way of like,
He's done some stuff.
yeah, typical Ozu, like it's kind of self-deprecating, but also like witty and kind of funny.
Let's see.
Okay. Another actress, Haruko Sugimura. She's the aunt in Light Spring. She is in Red Beard as, I think, one of the head nurses.
Yes, I've got her on my list.
Yeah, she'd always get support roles, but she was really good at playing like a matriarch, like a. I wouldn't call her motherly necessarily. But like she had to like play like
She has an extremely recognizable face. Like when you see her in movies, you like, oh yeah, that lady, yeah.
yeah, she was all over the place.
She's solid. I just realized you said Kunio Tanaka already. You said Kunio Tanaka already? No. Kinuyo.
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 Yeah.
That one you said.
Kinuyo Tanaka.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was on my list. I was like, who is that person? Oh, wait, never mind. It's right there.
What's her name? There was the little, the girl from Drunken Angel, who was also in The Idiot.
Is it no.
What's her name? Oh, okay. This is someone I have to bring up. Noriko Sengoku. She was had only very minor parts, but the minor parts are very memorable. She was paired with Mifune, I think, in two movies, Quiet Duel and Scandal. And she was in Stray Dog as the pickpocket who is caught, who smokes like no one has ever smoked before.
Yeah. Kuniko Miyake. Ozu actress no, I'm just naming another woman.
Okay.
Yeah, she was Ozu actress. Once again, another very recognizable face. Let's see, what was that movie?
Okay, the Drunken Angel. She played the girl, and she plays a daughter and the idiot. Yoshiko Kuga. She, I'm pretty sure she's still alive. Anyway, she just has a very interesting presence. She also played kind of smallish report roles, but whenever she showed up, she's pretty memorable.
Mm-hmm.
She's in Good Morning also, I think playing like the young woman in the couple that would have the TV.
Well, you know who else is in Good Morning?
Who?
Kinuyo, not Kinuyo Tanaka. What is that lady? I was just talking about her a second ago, that lady. Anyways.
Oh, Haruko.
Haruko?
And my last one is Eiichiro Tono. He's the innkeeper in Yojimbo. He's in I Live in Fear as a tan man.
Mm-hmm.
He's the tinkerer in Lower Depths. High and Low, he's a guy who... They ask, is so-and-so a good boss? He says, yeah, he's a good boss. And he's the guy who sells the dad the TV in Good Morning.
Mm-hmm.
Very distinct face. I won't call him a great actor, but he has a very striking, like, presence.
He stands out.
And just, he really stands out. Like, he'd be a Coen Brothers actor. He has a very distinct face.
Yeah, Kuniko Miyake is the one I was talking about that was in Good Morning.
Okay.
She's like the mom of the two kids. And she was in Early Spring, Early Summer, Late Spring.
So it's an Ozu regular.
Yeah. The only other person I want to mention was Joe Shishido, once again, which we did. He had his own episode, but...
Yeah.
He's great.
All right. Do you have favorite scenes / moments?
I mean, the only one I really wanted to talk about was the fight scene in Hidden Fortress.
Oh, that epic duel with the spears. Like
the former general and the current general or leader of whatever group. Yeah, and that just like an ongoing fight in a military camp, you know, where they switch a couple of weapons, right? And
I think it's just a spears the whole time, and like Toshiro,
or like breaks or something. I think.
Yeah, and like Toshiro, like he's testing out spears with the guys first, and like I just love the general. Like when the general first shows up, like Toshiro's about to be killed, and he's like, no, we're gonna fight. And you're gonna watch.
Yep. Yeah, and it's choreographed so well. It's like one of the best fights.
Yeah, like only movie I can think of that like even matches like that much choreography for like a fight would be like The Raid,
yeah,
or Raid 2,
yeah, something like that. Okay,
like even something like I don't know, like Die Hard or like American action movies in general don't really go into that much effort for like we're gonna have like one fight scene and it's gonna be, you know, look amazing, or like it seems to be a non-American thing.
Yeah, when you think, Hidden Fortress is the movie, like I said earlier, people associate with Star Wars. You think about it like in context of like, oh, that must have been the Obi-Wan Darth Vader fight. And that fight sucks compared, especially compared to this. Like there's no commitment from the actors in Star Wars about what's going on there. In this, you feel like you're watching two historical figures battle it out.
I don't think Alec Guinness would have cared that
Yeah,
much.
exactly.
He cared enough to, learn his lines and do that, but I don't think he would have cared enough for like choreography.
So what about you? Scenes?
Okay. Hidden Fortress, there's a moment where the two peasants are at the top of a hill and they're all scared, like, where'd Toshiro go? And then at the bottom of this hill, you see Toshiro, and he screams, and they get scared, and that's when he's like, and they catch up to him, and they're like, "How'd you get here so fast?" He said, "Oh, I took the secret route."
Yeah. Them sliding down that hill, almost freaking breaking their necks as rocks are sliding around them.
And just keeps going on, and I feel like, Chiaki and Fujiwara did not enjoy that. The hell sequence in Jokkaku.
I mean, all of
As this.
Jogoku is a hell sequence. What are you talking about?
Mean, when they go to Buddha's hell, and it's just this amazing makeup and set design, and it's like genuinely is creepy and unsettling, and then there's the whole like weird baby thing. I think someone had a baby or something. But anyways, the hell sequence is just like great special effects. And the King of Hell looks really creepy. There was the Deskaden, which has my favorite moment in a movie ever, which was the it's like the towards the end where like the peasant dad who looks like a ghoul is talking about like his mansion and he has a pool and you get that zoom out where it goes from like the reality to the fantasy, and I just love that moment. Like it's just my favorite moment and I've ever seen in a movie. In Drunken Angel, the introduction to the boss, because there's that guy in the background playing guitar, playing that one song constantly every night, and then the boss, the when a boss gets free from prison, he shows up, plays his song, and like that's when like the central character's like, "Oh no, he's back," and just like the way the guy shows up, and he's like, "Oh, do you know who I am?" Like, "Oh no," like, "Well, I'm gonna play you my song."
Yeah.
It's a great little moment.
Everyone knows.
He's announcing to to the whole community, Toshiro's dead.
So I got another one. In the 47 Ronin, in the second part, when the person tries to assassinate who he thinks is the basically the person that they want to kill eventually. And he tries to take him out when a play is going on, and it turns out not to be the guy in the costume.
Oh yeah, and it's like the guy he was just talking
Yeah,
to.
it's like another super important person. It's like if you'd killed this guy, it would have brought down the whole plan.
That would be so good. Man, but I had to set aside a couple of days for that. Heat Wave, when Ghost Fight Ren, the gambler is like practicing, like shifting the tiles between her fingers, and like she's topless, and it's like this like beautiful like artful, like moment, and like you see like the I think that she has a Buddha tattoo, like in full detail, and she has like the thing on her shoulder, and then suddenly knock, and I believe it's I think it's silent except for rain. in the background, and then suddenly in slow motion, like Nakadai bursts into their room.
I
But
don't remember.
that, you know?
No.
Yeah, he says something like, I'll destroy you and crush your bones. You better play it at your fullest."
No.
And then, and he says something like, "Consider this the most mercy I can show." This is a great Nakadai villain moment. A pornographer's orgy scene at the end is just like this really, like it really trippy and weird, and like it's shot in a way to show no nudity, and like the guy, you know, he's just going through with his partner who he makes the illegal porn with, and he's just like just walking through. Like this man, this big old house with people is having sex everywhere, and he's just kind of just like, yeah, whatever. And like he approaches his, and it gets kind of weird, gets into his weird daughter thing, and it, yeah, but
Yeah, when I think of the pornographers, that's not the moment I think of. I think of the part where they're trying to film that thing with a girl who's not there
yeah.
and in the head, and yeah, that part, which I don't want to spoil. You
Visual.
should just watch it.
Yeah. I'd say that moment, but that's should be seen unspoiled. But attacking women when they're searching Gondo's house at the end, and Miyamoto discovers the secret room by falling into it. That moment's so good. Like it goes from like they're like, oh, we got him, and then suddenly they can't find anything, and this like it's and like at the like the Gondo's like talking shit, and then suddenly you just hear her scream, and you see her fall, and then it's like, oh, that's where her secret room is. Like just the like it's not like through like detect through like the like detection. It's just like this purely an accident. They kind of nail him. All right. What are your favorite discoveries? And this could be like a director or
Tokyo Drifter.
movie or Tokyo Drifter.
Tokyo Drifter was my favorite, one of my favorite discoveries. I mean, I don't know. It hit all the right notes for me. It hits the same notes that something like Buckaroo Banzai hits for me in like a, I don't know if this is good, but I really like it kind of way.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Mine are the first one is discovering Juzo Itami, Shohei Imamura, and Hideo Gosha. Excuse me. Yeah, Emma was discovering Imamura was just like this is a mind blowing. Like layer of Japanese film I did not know was there, and then suddenly I discovered this like weird, really dark, really funny, really insightful, like kind of difficult, you know, films like the type of films I'm growing to like more and more, which is like stuff that's I guess like a bit harder edge, kind of like more, don't say upsetting, but things that are more willing to just be blunt and not like bullshit you, and like more able to show, like, yeah, life in post-war Japan really sucks, and I'm gonna show you, but also I'm gonna do a whole bunch of other stuff at the same time, so it's really layered. And Gosha is not a great director. But he's one of my favorite directors because he has made these really, like elevated action movies where he basically has made action movies for most of his career, but like he just did it in a way that had just like a bit more polish, a bit more. I'm not trying to sound pretentious, like the whole like elevated horror thing, you know what I'm saying? Like Gosha managed to be like, kind of sleazy and like it's just like a it's a like a samurai action movie or like Heat Wave, but he just did it in a way where it's like it just perfectly strikes that balance between sleazy, and like prestigious in a way that not many directors can really pull off. Do you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Okay. And Juzo Tommy was just kind of like discovering, I guess the best comparison would be the Coen brothers for Tommy. I'm not sure like who I could compare him with, because it's
Oh
very
yeah,
distinct.
because it's funny and yeah, I no, yeah, I think that's the best. Like I said, I was trying to think of other things, other places to put him. I that works.
Yeah, like if you're listening to this and have not seen Tampopo, well, first be warned, there's a on-screen animal death, but also it's tonally kind of like Coen Brothers, where it's very quirky and specific, and like I don't know, it's like he has had a certain sensibility to him that I really, really connect with. Let's see, and discovering Kinio Tanaka was more just an actress. She was a director and like a pioneer in Japanese film. That was just a very wonderful thing to come across. I wish I could see her movies, but they aren't really available over in this part of the world. They should be, but they aren't. Okay, favorite score, cinematography, like kind of production stuff that really stuck out to you.
Yeah, you're gonna have
Basically.
to help me out with that one.
Okay, I have Sword of Doom, because that is too that's to me one of the best shot movies I've ever seen. But nothing to elaborate on, really. Just the movie just looks incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you watch the movie, you'll know exactly what we mean.
Yeah, that's Shintaken number 8. I love the. What was I talking about? Why I put that there?
Yeah, I don't know why you put that there. But you like that movie a lot more than me.
Yeah, I can't remember why I picked that exactly. But yeah, apparently, like Sword of Doom is kind of the cinematography on that and score. What was it? The Scandalous Adventures of Burakan, that has an incredible score. That's super jazzy and super fun. And on the note of score, something I kind of realized after doing this podcast for so long is that if you're watching a Japanese movie from like the 40s and from like the 50s and 60s, and 40s too, and there's jazz in it, that means it's going to deal with the situation of the American occupation in some way.
Exclusively.
Yeah, like that'll play a major part in it, whether or not it's they can directly talk about it, but like Drunken Angel has the nightclub, Stray Dog has like a nightclub with playing like American jazz, and you have Black River has a dark jazzy score in the open it opens with Pigs and Battleships, has a dark jazzy score.
Detective Bureau 2-3, Go to Hell Bastards, or whatever, as a whole dance number sequence.
Yeah, but that's not. Oh, yeah, that's the only post-war, actually. Yeah, with the Americans. Yeah, that has a whole lot. So this like using American jazz is like code for, oh, this will deal with Americans in some way. Okay, what was the biggest surprise?
Well, in general, I'd say that the one I had no expectations for, because no one ever talked about it, was Durzu Ozala.
Okay.
Because it's not a Kurosawa movie that I'd ever heard of. It's not something that I'd ever seen brought up. And when we watched it, I walked in with zero expectations, and I was just absolutely blown away at how much depth there was to the movie, how amazing a story it was. And I guess if I had to talk cinematography, that movie is just gorgeous, with the backgrounds, the environment that they're working in, because it's all about a man who has to live in the forest in nature, and he's helping these Russian soldiers, and they have a bond of friendship that grows from that. And I just had no expectations, so that was a huge surprise.
Yeah, that's mine too. That is one of my favorite Kurosawas. I have the Kino DVD because it's kind of the only way you can watch it now, unfortunately. But yeah, that's just, it's the, I think it's the best looking Kurosawa movie, and I just love the like the scale of it. Like, he never really approached a movie this epic before or after this, and it's also his most personal film. Cause, well, Madadayo is really personal too, but like Madadayo is like, you know, covering kind of the relationship between a teacher and his students, where Dear Suzal is just the friendship between these two people from two different worlds, and it's just beautiful and heartwarming. And, you know, there are parts when you watch a movie where, like, the movie opens with, you know, the captain looking for a grave. So, you know, Dersu will die at some point. But, like, there are parts where it's like, oh no, are he going to die here? And it's this, you know, like the raft sequence. And I think it's He Can't Swim. And that's one of the most riveting things I've ever seen. And there's like a windstorm, like in Siberia, like in the fall. They weren't stupid enough to film during winter, but still filming in Siberia in the fall is still an insane thing to do. Yeah, that's that movie needs to be talked about more. Okay, what was the biggest disappointment?
For me, it was Kagemusha. Because I'm not even sure if that was a movie I'd seen like people talking about, but it's presented as like this kind of super saturated Technicolor film that like had the backing of a bunch of famous American directors, and like it was supposed to be Akira Kurosawa's like big comeback into the film world after
winning an Oscar with Dear Suzal.
Yeah, after Lying Low. If it won an Oscar, how come people aren't talking about it? Anyways. And yeah, I watched it and I was kind of bored to tears with it. It wasn't interesting. Like, yeah, it's pretty, but there's not really much going on in the movie.
Yeah, it's,
I feel like I ruined it for you, because you were coming into the podcast ready to punch, and then me and Lindsay were like, no, it was okay.
Yeah, I was faking the enthusiasm in that episode.
Oh.
I was really trying to find something to latch on to, but I don't know. Like, that was just kind of... I know some listeners will be upset. I know some of them love, are like, at least one listener I know really likes that movie a whole lot, that has been a guest. But, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's just kind of...
It's fine. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. It's fine. I guess my expectations were too high.
Yeah. But for me, it'd be Jokoku, because the stuff leading up to all the hell stuff was, I don't know, I found it kind of irritating.
I don't know, I really liked how stupid it was.
I found it kind of annoying after a certain point.
I mean, yeah, I understand that too, but like everything that was happening was like ridiculous. There's so many ridiculous things that happened in that movie.
Yeah. Let's see, yeah, Quiet Duel was another one where it's like, this is like peak period Kurosawa. Well, about to be peak period Kurosawa. But still, it's like young Toshiro, You get Shimura in there. It's like, okay, this should work. This should be real exciting. And no, not really.
I mean, we've had guests on that think that is one of Kurosawa's best movies. So,
Yeah.
like, in my opinion, I don't think Mifune was up to the amount of acting the role required yet. Like, he hadn't reached that skill level yet.
Yeah.
It's still, I owe it a rewatch. And someday
Yeah,
I'll
I
send you
think.
back your DVD, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, I get why people don't talk about it.
Yeah.
But,
I didn't have expectations when I walked into that one because no one talks about
I
it.
kind of did. I don't know. It's given the time period of Kurosawa that then it's like, well, I should like this more, but I just kind of don't. Okay, so Chiaki from Hidden Fortress was supposed to be the lead in Quiet Duel,
Yeah, you mentioned that
and
earlier.
I'm looking at it now, but he was only, at least the IMDb, was only in Stray Dog up until that point. So, Toshiro was a little more experienced.
Literally, like two movies.
Yeah. That would have been interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, there's that. Let's see, next I had What Should Be More Famous and talked about more.
I mean, we've kind of
Deirdre's.
talked about that, you know.
Yeah, Deirdre's Isle, Pigs and Battleships should be. It's pretty famous already, but it should be more famous. That's like a great introduction to Imamura.
I personally love that the 47 Ronin that we watched. I don't know if I can convince other people to watch it since it's 4 hours or 3.5 hours or whatever.
Four
Yeah,
hours.
4 hours long. Kenji Mizoguchi is the adaptation of that.
Yeah, I find Mizoguchi difficult to like recommend.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
So,
that's because it's a sad, usually a sad sack thing, and I guess this movie's kind of sad, but I think there's the nobility of the actions of the characters outshines the sadness of the situation.
Yeah, that's kind of been discussed already. What would you recommend to people in terms of the non-Kurosawa that we covered?
Besides the Scandalous Adventures Buracan, what else is there to recommend? No, I'm just kidding. I mean, like, I wasn't on that episode, but I really like Snow Trail, Toshiro's first movie. I'd say I'm really glad you got me to watch Detective Bureau 2-3. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is a lot of
Sword
fun.
of Doom, obviously, I think most people know that. Something we didn't discuss, and I don't think you've actually seen that. I would recommend everyone watch is oh crap Harakari.
Oh yeah, the Kobayashi.
Yeah, real good.
Yeah, you can watch that on net with Netflix DVD, which has a great selection, and I don't like when people use that as a punchline because it's actually a really great service that's better than streaming.
Kuroneko? Yeah, but it's not instant. I need it right now.
Be a little patient.
No.
Anyways, yeah, Kuroneko, that I would highly recommend that to people is a if you want to see classic Japanese horror and samurai too, that's like the best combination.
Yeah, I think I've recommended all the things. I mean, we already talked Good Morning. We already talked, taking him in the police van. There's, there, you know, I feel like we've talked the talk. And based on how many episodes this podcast is, we've also walked the walk.
Yeah, for Kurosawa, if you're listening to this and or if you want to introduce someone to Kurosawa, I'd say like Yojimbo or Hidden Fortress. would be a great place to start. Seven Samurai, I don't know, given the runtime.
Yeah, I think if you like Yojimbo, then you watch Seven Samurai.
Yeah, Hidden Fortress, you know, you can be like, hey, it's Star influenced Star Wars a whole bunch, and, you know.
Just say, hey, yeah. it's a great adventure movie.
Yeah, with a fight scene better than They Live.
It actually inspired They Live directly.
Who knows? Probably. I'd say, you know, if someone likes, you know, Hollywood noir stuff, Stray Dog and Drunken Angel. Although I have seen people classify High and Low as noir.
Yeah.
Which...
second half. But it's not... I mean, the second half is more like a police procedural. I wouldn't say it's noir.
Yeah, but I've seen people on Twitter during November call it noir, which...
And I hope you were shut up.
I don't know enough about noir to speak about it.
I mean, you know what is a good noir? Ghostbusters.
Okay. Yeah, so that has been High and Low, a Kurosawa podcast. We will return in this comes out in January and March or April-ish time with we're going to switch to Spike Lee. Well, we said that already, but let's say it again in case you forgot. Switching to Spike Lee. Paris Spike Lee with, like, Oscar winner or, like, this acclaimed film from that year, American film from that year, and, yeah, we'll see how, we're you know.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and a special episode will be on African films and other black films. Like, I will definitely do some Charles Burnett episodes. Killer Sheep is a definite. Daughters of Dust will be a first special episode. There will be a Robert Townsend special.
Don't give it all away already. Everybody knows.
Yeah, if I want to tackle the stuff you need to tackle. Mm. You know, maybe do Tookie Bookie, but it has some animal death, which is very graphic but relevant to the plot. So who knows with that. But yeah, so we'll
let's do a special on Frankie Faison.
I like him, but I don't know if I heard one do that. He is on The Wire?
Yeah.
And he's Coconut Joe and Do the Right Thing?
Yep.
One of the Caribbean guys, right?
Oh. And okay. One of the Caribbean guys in what?
And Do the Right Thing. He's like Coconut Joe.
Yeah, I can't remember what his character. He's definitely in.
I have to make sure. I have to check if he was Coconut Joe and Do the Right Thing.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Oh yeah, if you stuck around this whole time.
Oh yeah.
Hey, thanks. If
you didn't stick around, fuck you. No.
Okay, I was wrong. It's Coconut Sid.
Oh. Yeah, that's a faux pas. See, you got to get your shit together for the other podcast here. Come on.
Okay, so I was looking at the cast list of Do Right Thing, and I forgot some big people are on that.
All right.
Anyway, so yeah, thank you for all support. If you tweet at us, you know, recommend us to your friends, family, coworkers, whatever. Yeah, thank you if you were a guest. You know. Thank you for your time. There's at least one episode I regret doing because I was not in a good mental space to be doing it, but still powered through. That was a bad sleep pill episode, if you're wondering. And anyway, so you know, if you've stuck around this whole time, good on you.
I regret all of my episodes.
Okay. And that is it. We'll see you for an untitled Spike Lee podcast.
Thank you.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. Their show's Twitter is @highandlowpod. Their show can be found on Facebook under the title of High and Low, a Kurosawa podcast. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Podbean. We are no longer on Podient. Thank you for listening.
Speaking of the devil's sight, know it's the God, get your shit right. Mega trife, and yo, I killed you in a past life. On the mic while you was kicking that fast shit. You and Nick tried to get it, got blasted. Half-mastered ass style, mad rough jazz. When I struck, I had on Tim's in the black mask. Remember that shit? I know you don't remember Jack. That night, yo, I was sitting like a spike bat. And then you thought I was bugged out and crazy. Strapped for nonsense, after me became lazy. Yo, nobody budged while I shot slugs. Never shot ducks, I'm running with ducks that flood mugs. So grab your 8 plus 1, start flipping and tripping. Niggas is jetting, I'm licking off.